It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, a bit down this week, but I'm your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. I am Scotty Johnny. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam. How are you, Aaron? You hanging in there?
Hi, John. I'd ask you what's going on, man, but that's the even though that's the tagline to start the show, but I'm not going to this week because we know what's going on.
Yeah, we know where we are. We know what happened.
You better have that dump button ready because I can't talk for starters, but I might cuss while talking about the game.
And we try to keep it. I like to listen to this show with my kids just to hear how it goes, and I like to make sure everyone else can too.
It's a hard G. Hard G.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Rough week here after a very difficult loss. End of the season. We're looking to do our Requiem for a Packer season next week. We're going to try to get one of the other our friends of the podcast to come join us. Maybe Paul Noonan, maybe Jim Widener, somebody else. We're talking to a couple people to come in and help us kind of break down the whole thing next week. This week we're going to start just looking at just the Packers, and then we got some other things after that. what we did to calm down afterwards was the other games. So we'll kick everything off right away here. Well, you know, we'll start it off right then with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron, I'm obviously, a little out of it as I tried to walk right into the main event without getting our Twitter feeds and everything into it. We'll do it all at the end. I just want to get into this because we're holding in so much just angry energy at this point. And
poop. I internalize my stress.
All right. Yeah, that's this is good. This is already so good. There's three things I want to break this down into in terms of my feelings on this game. And how this all comes about is, first off, players, because that's the first big thing I think needs to happen. The couple major points in this game that really changed a lot. First off, Equanimeous drops the extra point. He drops that 2-point. I know it was slightly tipped. At that point, just cradle catch it, man. Just grab it against your chest and hold on for dear life. You need the 2 points. Even if they just kicked the extra point there at the end, it would have been a 7-point game. They could have come back into there. It ends up being an 8-point game. If they kick the extra point rather than chasing points there, they end up being 7. Hindsight's 20/20. EQ's got to catch that ball. It's just one of those things, right?
Right. Well, and especially too, I was screaming at the TV earlier in the game when I was still watching all the time. I was, full disclaimer to the listeners, I got, after getting burned in a couple NFC championship games in the last decade, a couple NLCS baseball games with the Brewers and one Eastern Conference with the Bucks. I shut off the TV after the Bucks scored that first touchdown in the second half. Not because I'm a coward and I didn't want to watch it, but it was like Clockwork Orange. Like, you would have had to peel my eyes open and put in drops in my eyes to keep me watching the game at that point. So I listened to the radio and I listened to highlights and I tried to do some de-stressful things around the house because I didn't want to get mad about a game that really has no bearing on my life outside the fact that I'm a sports fan. So I didn't get to see a lot of it. But when I did watch the first half, I was kind of screaming at the – and I mean, maybe some of the rest of you have caught of it too. So there was that pass out of the back of the end zone that Devontae didn't get his feet down in time. Yeah. Lazard was open on a quick slant.
Yeah, that's like the next thing I want to go into. Yeah, those.
Oh, so not to step on your call, but like...
No, go.
So when EQ got the chance to catch a 2-point conversion, because I was listening for scores and I'd turn the game back over when the score would happen, and I turned back over just in time to see EQ drop that ball. And all I was thinking to myself was, He didn't force it to Devontae or Tonyan.
Yeah.
In an end zone situation. He got it to EQ, slightly tipped. I mean, if it hits you in the hands, man.
Yeah.
It's That one was hard to take. There was just a couple of decisions by. I'll let you keep going, but yeah, a couple of the other decisions about receiver choices, and you know, they always said that the best thing that ever happened to Brett Favre was, as far as you know, his quarterback style was when Sterling Sharp had to early retire. It forced Brett Favre to look to other parts of the field and at the other receivers. Now, I would never say Sterling Sharp leaving the NFL early was a good thing. It was bad. Sterling Sharp should be in the Hall of Fame and would have been if he would have stuck around. He's breaking records that Stephon Diggs is going after this year, you know, so, and that was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. But it did make him look other ways. And that's the thing is that sometimes Devontae's so good that it feels like on some of the plays, you know, Devontae didn't turn around fast enough on that one would be touchdown play. And then that other one went out of the back of the end zone. And it was almost as if it was just a quick pass to him and nothing else happened. And they're in five receiver sets. Somebody else has got to be open. And Lazard, for not being fast or agile, is big with good hands. Bennett tends to catch real well if he gets the right, you know, opportunity. You know, there's other people out there on the field, and it just feels like sometimes there's laser focus on Devontae. But, yeah, EQ's got to catch that ball, man.
Yeah, and you went right into what I was my next point right on my sheet here. Rodgers is forcing the ball to Devontae on a couple of those where we settled for field goals inside the 10. Because one of them, like you said, Lazard is wide open. He's doing a slant route. He comes right over the middle of the field, and Rodgers just forces the ball to the back of the end zone on something there. Lazard is open. He's just – there's nobody within 4 yards of him, and he's walking into the end zone.
Right, and not open like he'll catch it and then get smoked by a linebacker or by a defensive back will have a chance to poke it out. No, he would have probably been able to, like you said, with EQ, he could have probably done the sit-down catch, you know, where you take it in the gut and you just cradle it in and fall down to the end zone. Like, he was that open. There was no one else around him. As a matter of fact, he looked up and you could almost see you could almost read by his body language, like, he could see the ball going past him, like, what's going on? Like, you could see his body, like, doing like a, why isn't the ball hitting me right now in the chest as I'm crossing the goal line wide open?
Yeah. And on the other one, too, there's a spot where he's forcing it to Devontae right at the goal line, you know, where there's two guys by Devontae, and I think there's another guy by Lazard, but you can see on the other side, MVS makes a break and cuts away. He's got a good yard and a half gap guy off his back hip cutting to open field. And Rodgers doesn't see him or whatever. He forces the ball in there again, and they kick another field goal. I mean, that's 8 points that ended up just being Rodgers not seeing it. There's another play too at one point where actually he doesn't see MV or doesn't see Devontae. Where Devontae gets a clean release straight down the field, wide open 20 yards down the field, just jogging. And Rodgers didn't see it. There were just a couple plays Rodgers got locked in on, assuming he had to make a certain read. And if it wasn't going to be there, then it wasn't going to be anything.
Well, and I'm sure you're going to probably go after this in some of your takes going forward here, but also too, we talked about it, and that is that, you know, Aaron Rodgers' release time from snap, you corrected me on this, and I knew this was right, but I, you know, his release time this year from snap is the best it's been ever or in a long time, like from the time he snaps to the time he throws, as opposed to holding onto the ball forever. But I said, he's been able to get so comfortable in the pocket, at least especially in the later part of the year. Think about the Rams last week. He just hung out back there. And he got touched like once all game. Dude was getting smoked yesterday. I mean, he was getting pummeled. He got sacked 5 times officially. And so I wonder how much of that fed into it too. Like, you know, the throw to Devontae on the left side, the back shoulder throw that he didn't make.
That was a tough catch if you made that.
That was a tough catch. Devontae Adams makes that catch and Aaron Rodgers throws that ball. And I mean, I can see that. That's signature Aaron Rodgers move to good receivers. And so you miss that one, no big deal. You make it, it's highlight reel stuff. You know, Greg Jennings, you know, made a lot of money because of that. A lot of the receivers in the early or around the Super Bowl time made that catch. But you almost got the feeling, and it's, you know, when trying to do a podcast, it's hard to say, well, I saw this and saw that when you shut off the second half of the game. But going back and watching the replay package as hard as it was before this podcast, just so I could see some of the stuff, I started getting the feeling that he was kind of forcing some stuff because he didn't want to take another sack.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just,
I mean, our defensive and offensive lines, it all started there. We got beat on both sides, like in the front. And that's
Kenny Clark played really well. Kenny Clark had himself a day. Preston was okay. He had a couple big plays. He got to Brady a little bit here and there. I didn't see Za'Darius do a ton. I mean, I think they emphasized on him, which is one of the reasons why also Kenny Clark was able to get a good day. I mean, he made himself known.
Well, and Brady was complaining that one time that Za'Darius dumped him after the throw. You know what happened directly after that? Three interceptions.
Right.
Because he dumped him right on the back of his head, let him know that he was coming, and Brady started made three really bad throws the next three drives. Well, like, it was the only bit of pressure that he saw all day.
And he'd been doing that quite a bit in the game. To be entirely clear, we'll go look at this thing here. Like, Brady had a 73.8 rating. He had three touchdowns, three picks, 20 of 36. He was only sacked the once by Kenny Clark. But Cyril, he didn't have that great a game. I mean, in terms of if you were just looking at just the quarterback play and the victory was given to whichever team had the better it was Rodgers. Rodgers was the better quarterback out there yesterday. It wasn't really even close.
Brady should have been picked 4.5 times. Redmond dropped the one before the half, which was completely inexcusable. Like we said during prep, like he could put his hand up and fair caught that one. That one was bad. And Alligator then the one arms. where Godwin beat him on third down.
He wasn't even beat. He was right there. He just didn't quite get the ball knocked away. It's like,
who was it? King that got beat? Well,
at the one before the half, that was King. Yeah.
That was King. No, not the touchdown. The one where that long third down play where he was right there.
Fournette, that was Redmond. And then Fournette had the weird 20-yard run right after that where, that's the one where they had him at the bottom of the pile, held onto his ankle, but he's being sat on. Like, it was so terrible.
Right. No, that was Redmond that was on that one. Yeah. If Redmond would have turned around, he had an easy pick because he was in place to do it. But I'm talking about Redmond, or who was the one just before fourth down and three when Brady aired it down the right side of the field and it was a duck.
Yeah. Redmond didn't catch it. Yeah. He just alligator armed it and didn't catch it.
Okay. So those were both Redmond. Okay.
Yeah. All right. He did not have himself a day.
He didn't. I mean, and frankly, that the next, you know, two plays later, they're in the end zone after King gets burned on completely inexcusable. Why are you playing man when they've got one shot at the end zone?
Especially man with no help. It made no sense at all.
You should line up eight people across the end zone line.
Yeah, you should be in quarters, and you should be just they didn't have any more timeouts. We were looking for them to try to kick a really long field goal or something, and then they said, no, let's just go for it. And, you know, Redmond was my last.
They had fourth and three. They originally brought out the punt team.
Yeah,
and then you could tell they kind of went, well, what's the point? Like,
yeah, this half's going to end.
The Packers think, you know, what was it, like 20 seconds left when they did the fourth and three, because there's only 11 when they scored the touchdown.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So I mean, it was a brilliant play by Arians, like. Well, what's the point? Like, they ain't got any timeouts. Let's run on fourth and three. The best they can do is, like, a long pass and a Hail Mary. We'll still go into the half by a point, probably, or only down by three. Or we can just ice it here and try and get a field goal. And they got way more than that. So, I mean, it was ballsy play by Tampa Bay to not, on that fourth and three, to not punt it. But...
yeah, man, I'll say Redmond was kind of the last thing on my player section here. But yeah, that leads into the next part, is like the coaching difference here. Arians is playing to win, and It just felt like LaFleur was just kind of playing. Like he would, the sort of gutsy calls he made all season long, he didn't do here. He played it differently today, or you know, Sunday. Played it differently Sunday than he'd played it all year long. Down by eight with just over 2 minutes left in the game, he always goes for that one. He would have always gone for that in the regular season. Why does it change in the playoffs? Why did it change for him in the playoffs to not go for it right there? Because that's a play he always calls.
Right, and as I said to you in the prep too, not only that, but you know, say what you will about Brady, he's the best closer. I mean, his teams are the best closer ever. Like, you don't kick a field goal and then give the ball back to Brady with 2 minutes left in the game, expecting to get it back and march down the field.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people you would do that to.
No.
To be clear, they got to the NFC title game. Whoever you're playing, you wouldn't have done that to Breeze.
I wouldn't have done that to Chad Henne. I mean, I wouldn't have done that to Gus Frerotte after he smoked his head up against the pad in the back of the end zone. I mean, you just don't. Like, why would you? I mean, you're better off just going for it because at least then you've buried him deep. And then you're going to try and stop him again and go for another touchdown and, you know, 3 points. Because you still got to score a touchdown, you know, like no matter what. If you kick a field goal, you still got to score another touchdown. Like, you're better off burying him at the one-yard line and have him work out of a hole, get a punt at the 50-yard line, and then try for another touchdown two-point conversion. Instead, you guaranteed start at the 25, which punts you back to your own 20 if you even stop him, which they didn't. And then you have to go the whole length of a field for a touchdown. You're better off just going for it. Like, there's no absolute reason why you should do that. What happens if they don't get the touchdown? The Buccaneers get a first and 10 at their 4?
Yeah, something like that. Well, here's the secondary thing. Secondary point on that. If you go for that, kick the field goal, why in the world would you kick it off? Like, why don't you onside it? They need a first down to seal the game, basically. That's all they needed. They needed a first down, and the game was over. I mean, and they got it in ridiculously stupid fashion, but they needed a first down, and they could run the clock out. You just get the ball back. Like, it doesn't matter if they had the ball at the 45 or the 20, like they got it. I mean, just why kick it back off to them? I don't get it at all. It's just...
Right. No, you're... It's like, just the fact that if you're going to kick it off, you're probably going to go for a touchback because you don't want them returning it, or you try some goofy. Either way, so you're kicking it deep to them. They're still going to get the ball out at least at the 15-yard line minimum. What's the point? You may as well go for the touchdown. If you don't get it, they're at the 4. They have little space to operate. You're guaranteeing they're going to run. They're not going to drop back and risk a safety at the 4-yard line. So you can pretty much kind of figure out what you're going to do on defense.
Yeah. I don't know. That call baffled me. I didn't understand it. It's not the way that LaFleur has coached all year. It was a complete change in his character this game. He was coaching scared. He was playing in ways to try to avoid going at them in the way that they went right at the Rams. And I don't understand what the difference was between these two. The Rams have a better defense than the team we played. The Rams are a better defense than Tampa. The big difference, I said this last week too, is that their linebackers are way faster. And this almost makes me feel, you know, the one joy I will take out of this is last year when we lost to the 49ers, we said, we need to be like that offense. Let's go get a power running back and a big blocking tight end, and let's go do this. Maybe this year we go out and try to draft a really fast, big linebacker. Somebody like Devin White, who can clean up a lot of mistakes, because they're a massively athletic guy in the middle of your offense or your defense there who can just clean up plays, be in the passing game, be in the running game, and do all those things. We haven't had a real, like, serious all-around type linebacker like that since Nick Barnett.
No, Johnny Holland.
Nah, well, Nick Barnett could cover. Brian he could Noble. Go anywhere. He could do all those things. I mean, like, to be clear to everybody, because I bet nobody remembers this, Nick Barnett out-tackled Brian Urlacher half his career, basically. So he was a tackle guy, and he could cover. He was one of those type of guys. You want a fast guy who can do a lot of that that sort of stuff for you. One of the other things I guess was frustrating for me, I don't know about you, Aaron, but the way the Packers quit on the run for the most part. We had 16 total rushes as a team. Aaron Jones got six. I mean, he got hurt is one thing, but we have A.J. Dillon just for this team. We had several times where we had the ball and we needed to get down the field, but we had time. We just needed to go down and take one of those. I mean, we scored in one of the Brady interceptions, but we needed to score in one of the other two. And instead we went three and out. And we didn't use the guy who could just change up the way that game was going to go and trying to do some of that. I don't understand giving up on the run game as quickly as we did. We were getting 4.2 a carry. But probably the worst thing that I can think of in terms of sheer coaching madness in this game is Pettine calling man coverage. Man, and I don't know if it was a one deep or what he was doing, because he didn't have anybody behind King. And King was alone on an island against the fastest receiver they had, and just alone. And I don't get it at all. It makes no sense.
And then just general bad cornerback play. Like, it wasn't like, and then because he went up to, when he jumped up to swat that ball, he jumped a good 3 seconds early. And, like, and he was already on the ground as the ball was going over his head, too. Like,
the way he waited to turn.
At that point, just tackle the receiver. Turn around and tackle the receiver in the end zone.
Right. I mean, like, it took so long. He was sitting back on his heels. I mean, the technique that he had looked like he was in a catch technique. Like, he was waiting for a button hook. Like, he was waiting for him to hitch. But he didn't hitch.
Well, yeah, because cornerback covering him was sitting on the ground already. So he just knew he had to do everything he could not to drop that ball.
I'm saying it was Kevin King was just, he was in a catch technique. Like, he's just waiting for the receiver to come to him. Like, he's waiting for it to be a hitch route and he can run up on it. He was back on his heels. I mean, you got to bail immediately knowing that the only thing you can't do is give up the touchdown. It's the one thing you could not do. And it's the one thing he did.
Well, and that's why you need the coverage over top, too, because I know that they were all probably told, don't let him get out of bounds for an easy field goal. Well, at that point, like, where you're at, like, you also got to
you got to
do the box. You know, you got to do the box where you put four across the end zone and then up along the sidelines and let anything happen over the middle. That's not what they were doing. I mean, even LaFleur said it in the post game, like, we shouldn't have been in man at the end of the half.
And in a game that was decided by 5 points.
Well, no shoot, Sherlock. You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, 5-point game, and there's seven right there. It was a close game. You allowed it to become a big game, and then you had to play a ton of catch-up against a defense that was allowed to pin its ears back. I mean, that's exactly what we wanted to do, was get up and then let our defense is built to play with a lead. The fact that we were able to come back, that we shut down Tom Brady in the second half when we didn't have a lead, that actually plays very well into how well the players played. But they have been let down over and over the season by being placed in situations where they're not in position to make the plays. I mean, coaching is put the players in position to make the plays. And then if they don't, then it's the players' fault and you got to get new players. These players weren't put in positions to make those plays in many cases. King's got to make that.
Was Redmond still on the field at that point? Because at that point, he'd messed up numerous times. Like, was he supposed to be the over coverage?
I guess I haven't looked back to that. But there's no safety anywhere. Like, nobody could roll over. Even if he was in a one on a ball that was in the air for 33 seconds, because Tom Brady doesn't have that kind of arm. And you're like, well, look how far he can throw. And you're like, do you see how high the ball goes? It has to leave the screen. It has to do that. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't have the rope to be able to get it there. The number of plays where when Brady is throwing deep, he is falling backwards and just trying to just throw his whole body to just whip it. Because he can't really throw the ball that far. He's not a great deep ball thrower. Other than having Randy Moss, he's never been an accurate deep ball guy for the most part.
No, he was a good deep ball thrower for about 4 years.
Yeah.
But he played his game. Like, I'm the biggest Brady apologist.
He knows who he is. Because he knows who he is. He doesn't throw that ball well. He'll throw a 20-yard pass and feel very happy about that. But he's not throwing it 30-yard. He's not pushing it down the field. He's not going to beat your safeties. He's hoping to get that seam route to Gronk or something like that is most of his career deep passing, other than the brief spot where he had Randy Moss.
Otherwise, he does what he did yesterday, and that's, you know, throw right over top of your linebacker to your wide receiver who was disguised as a running back that came out of the backfield, and now you're chasing down that wide receiver for the next 20 yards. He's getting a ton of yak yards. I mean, this has been Brady's MO for 20 years in this league, except for that brief time when he could throw it to Randy Moss, and somehow no one gets that.
Like, I don't, seriously, like, get him off his spot.
Don't even rush him. Just have one person in the middle, like Kenny Clark, like that old psycho Dom Capers defense, and then just have 10 people covering every 10 square yards from the line of scrimmage down, and one safety that might have to get deep like they did at the end of the first half. I mean, why doesn't – I mean, I'm not a coach in the NFL. Why can't someone figure that out? Like, it's, you know, Barry, who I can't say his last name on Twitter, has been saying that for years until the fact that he – now he's not on Twitter anymore. No, but he's anyhow, back.
He's back. I mean,
That's it. Like, look at this amazing downfield throw by Tom Brady. He gets it all of 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. No other quarterback in the NFL can do that.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, that's the other thing. I guess what teams do that beat him pretty well is you make him have to move because he can't throw on the move. And then he's going to throw picks. And in fairness, the other thing is, like, Brady in the game yesterday did throw deep like 5 times, and one just went way out of bounds. 3 of them were picked, and one of them was caught on a highly contested ball that should have been knocked away by Redman. And the other one was a fluke catch where we played the stupidest pass coverage you could have imagined, and of course it hurt us because we weren't ready. That wasn't Brady. There was nothing particularly amazing by what he did. He got very lucky on very badly thrown balls. I mean, he got lucky on 2 of them. One of them didn't hurt, and 3 of them hurt, but not enough.
Those Giants teams, you know, there's all this talk now with Philip Rivers retiring. You know, who is the better quarterback between Philip Rivers and Eli Manning? And the correct answer is
Rivers.
Philip Rivers, 100% of the time. And actually, we didn't get to enjoy Philip Rivers nearly as much as we should have because he is kind of like Brett Favre in the fact that he's just funny, and he was buried in San Diego. And if he would have been the one in New York, it would have been he'd be a celebrity because that dude's awesome. Like Philip Rivers, if you ever hear him talk, super cool. Yeah. But the whole thing is that they brought up how did he beat Brady twice in the Super Bowl, and it wasn't the Tyree catch. It wasn't the throw to Hakeem Nicks. Was that the one he hit on the left sideline?
Yeah,
it was the Osi Omenyora and Jason Pierre-Paul and Strahan for one of them, you know, like that
defense
was unbelievable. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers did the smartest thing they could. They signed Jason Pierre-Paul and then brought in Tom Brady because that's one of the dudes that made sure Tom Brady didn't win those Super Bowls was because he was, I mean, that's what you need to do. And I mean, you got to get it fast too. It's got to come from the front four. And Kenny Clark, bless his soul, played a great game. But Kenny Clark's not the one who's going to be making the pressure. Kenny Clark does what Kenny Clark does, and that's he cleans up the middle. He sucks up 2 to 3 blockers on every single play. You know, it was Kenny did play a good game, and he had a lot of good plays in the run game. But he's one man, you know, and it's
The other shining light in this game, I guess, for the Packers was MVS played great. He didn't drop anything. He had a ball where they really tried to interfere with him, and then he turned it into a touchdown. I mean, they were trying to grab onto his shoulder pad. The players and the coaching alone, that was enough to kind of sway this game. But you can't get into the end of this without talking about the fact that the referees for, you know, 58 minutes – Let the Tampa Bay Buccaneers absolutely maul every Packers wide receiver. Every catch had a guy hanging off of him. The interception, I mean, if I were to grab a stranger and follow them for as long, just holding onto their shirt, as long as that guy was allowed to hold on to Lazard, I'd get arrested. Like, what was going on? He grabbed him from the line of scrimmage, followed him 12 yards downfield, still holding him. The amazing part of his interception is that he was able to get his hands off of him enough to be able to make the catch. Not that he caught that was a garbage play. And you're like, okay, that's fine. Because what you do is you wash your hands of it. You're like, if you don't call it all game, you don't call it all game. You have to adjust to that then if you're the offense. Mm. And then at the end of the game, then it was a penalty. And that one was not as bad as like five different plays that happened to Tampa Bay, which I don't care about if you call it the whole game. They changed the way they called the game when the game was on the line. A five-point game, Tampa Bay is about to punt. That ball is 5 feet over his head. He has 0% chance of catching that ball. He can't get there. He could not have gotten
there. I said it last week with you and Wendy. I said the one thing you have to be, and this is conspiracy theory stuff, but
I'm on it.
I said you have to be. The thing I'm most scared of is the narrative. Mm-hmm. The league wants Brady back in another Super Bowl with Tampa Bay at home hosting it, so he can win a Super Bowl at home with and be the first one. The first one to win one.
Even to play in, the first one to play in one, yeah.
First one to play in his own stadium, and the NFL does this. They needed a narrative, so he can win in his own stadium. He can beat Patrick Mahomes, pass the torch to Patrick Mahomes, blah blah blah, whatever. Believe me, I'm much more happy with I'm happy with Mahomes for now winning, but it hit me up in 5 years. But I mean, it's just that's. I mean, I wasn't lying. We saw this with Ask Gruden. about the Patriots and various other things, and you know, because that's what we really want as fans. Brady in the Super Bowl for the 10th time in 21 years, because that's what we want. That's what every fan wants. No, that's what the NFL wants. And I don't know who he's got pictures of or what, but for some reason they've anointed Brady that this is how we're going to do it. You know, and I think I should have known this at first. I thought there's no way Tom Brady's going to go to Tampa Bay and they're going to turn around in a year, even with the roster they had. And then getting Leonard Fournette.
Yeah.
You know, like just getting him out of nowhere. And at first, we were all like, whatever. You know,
I'm still at whatever. He didn't do anything this season.
Right. But I mean, it's just like, so all these things falling into place. And then the Patriots, you know, Gronk unretires. I mean, like Gronk didn't do much either, but Gronk unretires and the Patriots just give him to the Buccaneers for a fourth round draft pick, which was a smart move by the Patriots. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Cause they weren't getting anything out of Gronk. They got a fourth rounder out of him instead. There you go.
Yeah, they got a fourth rounder for a retired player.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, just stuff like that, but it was like literally like loading up, like the NFL's trying to, it's almost as if the NFL's trying to prove that they can be like the NBA, that they can plug and play players where they see necessary to make them work. And in the meantime, it's, you know, hey, we're going to keep building on Brady here and Brady. And it's, I knew it was coming. And when that pass interference call was called,
yeah,
that you're talking about, I was just like, there it is. That's the one. You only need one or two plays that are called like that. Like, and just our receivers getting mugged all game long, and you just assume that their receivers are getting mugged too. And there was a couple plays where I saw, you know, it was sort of fair-ish.
Yeah, there's some hand fighting that was going on, and you're like, "That's fair. Call both ways. That's fine. I don't. Never mind.
It was. But then at the end, all of a sudden, to pull that one out of your rear collective,
your fourth point of contact.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, really, that's the one you're going to call. Like, but that's how this works. You know, it's you keep it close and then you just do that. And then,
yeah,
that's what I meant by when I said, I'm scared of the narrative and that's it. Like, it doesn't take much to turn out the outcome of a game. Do I think these games are rigged? Absolutely not. I'm not saying that one bit at all, but like when there's a close game and all of a sudden there's, you know, this call out of nowhere and you're like, where did that even come from? Like, why would you do that? And then they conferred after that penalty too, didn't they? Like, was that actually a pass interference? And then they still said it.
They almost ran an entire another play before they actually threw the flag, it seemed. Because they really had to think about that. And they're like, yeah, no, let's do it now. Right? Let's do it right now. Let's change everything about this game, the tenor and the tone of this game entirely. I mean, with 2 minutes left.
It's so like I said, I've moved away from conspiracy theories years ago, except for the fact that we never landed on the moon. But
we did.
No, we didn't.
That's crazy.
You're insane. You're insane for listening to your government. Anyways, but
you can see it on just, a telescope.
But just,
you know
just
that.
Weird, because I did watch the replay on how that happened. It was like, why on earth would you call it that late? Like, if unless someone told you to, like, because no, almost every weird. Other flag, the flag is almost out of your pocket or out of your waistline before the play is even done. Like, especially pass interferences and stuff like that. Like, it was such a long delayed thing. Like, it was just like, why, what made you throw that flag that late? Like,
it was super weird. I don't know. That was...
especially after the game. Now, if they'd been doing that all game, then I'd be like, yeah. Oh my God. Like, again, really?
Yeah. But then you're like, you know, they're going to call that. That's when you get mad at your player. Cause you're like, you know, they'll call that. But
yeah,
I mean, like, that had not been called, and that had happened 15, 20 times that I saw easily.
And that's why, like, I said, yeah. It's not conspiracy theory stuff, but it isn't. Like, I'm just like, why on earth after that delay would you do that when you haven't done that all game? Like, refs are pretty much consistent across the board. And that's the thing too, is like when you see refs start making bad calls like 3 minutes into a game, you rock your head back and you go, oh God, it's one of those games, because you know it's gonna be like that the whole game. Like, they don't change. Like, you know, the head ref goes, here's how we're going to call this game, blah, 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 blah. And they do that. They're professionals, too. They have a game plan themselves, you know? And,
yeah,
you know.
It did the one thing, too.
I got ranty there and said the moon landing was fake and stuff, but, yeah.
Which is crazy, yeah. But the...
You're crazy.
You know, you can see it with telescopes, right? I mean, we left not things there. You can see it.
There's tinfoil on the top of my head. I can't.
Well, no, that's true. But, I mean, like... The thing that just gets me is, like, there's a holding on that play with Wirfs on that pass interference. I don't care about that one. That doesn't get called all the time. Like, all the time. It's that sort of hold is almost never called. Right. So that doesn't bother me at all, because that's the way that play is usually called. But you know what it did do is NFC North fans suddenly remembered what football was today, because they're out in force saying, like, now you know how we feel. We're like, what? And they're like, remember that game we lost by 3 touchdowns? Well, one time there was a holding. Like, you guys are the worst. The worst.
Well, that's like I said, and you liked it on Twitter, too, is that was the second greatest game in Vikings fans' history.
Yes.
Oh, only number
two. Lions fans
are
the worst on that, though.
The 2015 NFC Championship game against Seahawks. That is the greatest game in Vikings fans' history.
But, I mean, the thing is like, Lions fans are oddly the worst about their, like, they really believe that the NFL is after Detroit. I was like, you seriously think? And, like, this is how deranged the thought is. The idea is that the NFL, headquartered in New York, is saying that they specifically have to make sure that the smallest market they have gets special treatment. They would move the Packers tomorrow if they had the authority. They would move them. It doesn't even matter where they move. They would move them to Portland tomorrow if they could. It's the smallest franchise in all of professional sports. They would move them to Mexico City tomorrow or Toronto.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Absolutely, they would. No. They would. They would love to have. Mexico City is the biggest city in all of North America. They'd move them there tomorrow if they could, but they can't because there's a bunch of guys at the American Legion who own most of the shares of stock, and they can't get them to sell.
I think it's a little bit more than that, too. The Packers brand is worth a whole lot, and if you move them out of Green Bay, like, that's...
Mm-hmm. They don't care. They hate having Green Bay in the market. They don't want the market. They, you know, that's why, like, if they're sharing them, they don't like putting them on a lot. Like, Packers fans across the country hate the fact that, you know, they have to watch from other places because they never get the coverage for the team that they'd like to have. There's just nothing there. And they don't like talking about them. They're not on there. And the other thing is, like, the weird narratives that come out of these games. People write the narrative before the game that will be what happens if you win. Like, the narrative was, well, Tom Brady's going to win. It's Brady versus Rodgers. Rodgers was the better quarterback in this game, and the only thing they will talk about is Brady. Brady did not play particularly well. He had a couple of fluke plays and a bad call that went his way, and it's all about what Brady did. And you're like, kind of like the Super Bowl, where he became, like, the best quarterback depending on whether or not his guy intercepted a ball or not for him.
Right. Well, seriously, I'll throw that argument in your face too, is because Tampa Bay is not a big market either. I mean, they're Florida, so it's a big football market, but Tampa Bay is not a big market either. Look at it in baseball. I mean, it's by far the smallest market in the AL East. And, you know, they do okay, but nobody watches them. They can't get any stands, get any fans in their stands or anything like that. Tampa Bay's a, you know, they were the worst team in NFL history at one point when they started off 0-26. When Brad Johnson took that defense, I mean, Tampa is
the 12th largest market in the United States.
Well, but still, they've been utterly useless for 18 years. So 12th largest?
12th no. largest, according to Nielsen.
Does that include Orlando then?
No, it's the Tampa St. Pete area. And it was Sarasota, Tampa St. Pete. That area, designated market area by the Nielsen Ratings Company, is the 12th market in the United States. It's New York, LA, Chicago, Philadelphia, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Francisco.
Where's Kansas City?
Let's see, where's Kansas City? Kansas City is 32.
Where's Portland?
Portland? Portland is 22. Charlotte's 21. Sacramento, they don't have a football team. That's 20. Cleveland, they don't have a team. Minneapolis, they don't have a team.
Well, Minneapolis is 13 still, right? 13 or 15 somewhere?
16. No, I'm sorry, 15, yeah. 15 right now.
Okay, they've always been like mid-teens.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like, come on. Yeah, no. Milwaukee's 35.
Well, I guess Florida doesn't pull any baseball fans.
Grand Rapids is 45. Fort Myers, Naples is 53. Tulsa is 58.
Grand Rapids is 45? Holy smokes.
Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo.
I mean, but the thing
and
is,
Green too, Bay is 67.
So, John, coming up and doing this stuff like in college, you got to remember too that the Packers are a little bit different in the fact that they're not. You can't just say, "Well, it's Green Bay and nobody else." Well, it's the entire state of Wisconsin outside of the Cowboys and maybe the Steelers. They have the largest following. Now, the Patriots have pulled a ton recently, but I'm guessing the Favre effect happened with Brady, where a lot of them went to Tampa Bay afterwards. Green Bay is the third biggest followed team in the NFL.
Yeah, they're right there.
That brand isn't going to follow them to Mexico City, Portland, or any. I mean,
says who?
That's why Arizona was supposed to play.
The Raiders brand followed them everywhere. The Raiders brand followed them everywhere. They're one of those type of teams. They've gone to three different cities.
It's because Al Davis kicked the A word. Al Davis was cool back in the day, but he was the Rebel Maverick. But I mean, it's just, I mean, I get it. Like, I don't think the NFL would bail on Green Bay quite as fast as you think they would.
But they're not pulling any strings to make sure Green Bay does anything. They'd rather see New York play, you know, they want to see the Jets and Bears in the Super Bowl or the Rams to play whoever.
They want Patriots Rams. They want Boston LA, just like the NBA does. Like MLB does. And it's going to come to a point, maybe in our lifetime, that there's going to be like two separate leagues. Like we've talked about in the NBA, like eventually, like, because everyone keeps talking about NBA being the Milwaukee being the anomaly. Like that's what they talk about in Minnesota all the time on KFan, is how fast are the Timberwolves going to get moved out of Minnesota?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
because Vegas wants a basketball team.
Yeah.
And Seattle wants a basketball team back. And nobody cares about basketball in Minnesota except for no one. And no one pays attention to that team. And nobody even knows why they have a team. You know, it's like, and so, you know, it's, you see that's, and you see that stuff too. And it's,
All right, let's get off this. What we'll do is next week we'll look to do our Requiem for a Packers season and come back at it, look for the whole season rather than just this game. But we're done with this game basically for now, and we'll come back and look at the rest of it. In the brief bit of, you know, hey, Wisconsin sports continued to hurt my feelings this last week. The Badgers against Ohio State. I mean, they beat Northwestern. They played their game. They've had an interesting thing recently where they've let Tyler Wall basically take the Nate Reaver's starting spot. And, I mean, Reaver is still getting his minutes. He is, but it's just something that they talked to guard about it, and guard's been saying it's a lot of matchups. a lot of just how the rotations are working, that they thought that Wall gave them more defensively to start off with in games. And, you know, it worked out fine. Rutgers and Northwestern. Northwestern just, you know, they got ranked for a little bit early and got ESPN super excited because that place is full of people from the McDill School. School or whatever. But, man, they played Ohio State at home, and they had one of those things that just happens when you're a team that does a lot of jump shots. They couldn't hit anything. They just couldn't. The defense rotated all right, and the ball movement on offense was fine. There wasn't anything about the particular style of play that was killing them for the most part. I mean, like, the way they were playing was playing their game, but, man, they could not hit threes. At the end of the game, towards the end, Aleem Ford comes in and hits three straight three-pointers. I mean, it was amazing. And that got the Badgers to within 4 points. Not within 4 points. They got to 4 points away. They were 4 points down, and then it just fell apart from there. It just absolutely fell. I don't think they scored another point, maybe. It's entirely possible they didn't score again, and they lost by 12. I think it was, yeah, like 62 to 66. But then the next 8 points are all Ohio State. Just couldn't get anything going. Following them a bunch at the end of the game to really just put that score out there at the end, because we just kept following them while they were in the bonus, which I didn't even understand, because we weren't going to score six in the time that we had left, and it didn't make any sense. And we just put them back in the line to score another two, and then we'd put them on the line to score another two. Yeah, just couldn't get our shots down. Until the end, they were relatively unsloppy. But then, you know, just towards the end, it felt like they really got frustrated. They were really trying to push things. Demetric Trice had a couple that he just dribbled out of bounds, just through to nowhere. Just weird plays. I mean, but that was at the end when things were kind of falling apart on him on this game. It was just one of those games that, for the most part, the Badgers just couldn't shoot. They dropped down to 14th. They're 12-4. They're third in the Big Ten right now. They were tied for second, but they're down to third. Behind Michigan and Iowa, and those teams look so, so good. But yeah, I mean, just Reavers has to get back onto his game. Potter has to be in it mentally. He sometimes gets a little angry and lets that get into him. But yeah, the thing I keep saying is, I really wish our bigs played like bigs.
But they flow through you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just like, I want them to be tougher down low. They can do it. Like, Potter does it every now and then. He'll take over down low. Strike me down. I should be more powerful. but yeah, just, I don't know. I just wish they'd played better down low. They should get some help here. They get a chance to go get Maryland on the road, and then they get a home and home with Penn State, making up for the postponed game from earlier this year. Yeah, they got a chance. Hopefully the next couple of games they can get revenge for that loss to Maryland, and then pick up a couple games here before they get Michigan back. They'll have number 19 Illinois coming up, and Michigan and Iowa towards the end here. So that'll be – there's still plenty of tough games on the schedule yet to go.
Big Ten is nuts, man. Like, yeah, literally, it's Maryland, which they're not ranked right now, but Maryland's had a couple wins against some of the bigger teams, I think, right?
Yeah, they beat Wisconsin.
They beat Minnesota too, I think, right?
Yeah.
Not that Minnesota's yeah.
Minnesota's one, yeah, it's been kind of overrated. Minnesota's
been good-ish this year, which
good-ish is pretty good. Good-ish. I think
yeah. Really, and so that's fair. And then of course in Illinois, they're 19.
Yep.
They play Nebraska, which that's always fun. And then they play Michigan again. Yep. I mean, that's on Valentine's Day. So I mean, that's the next 2 weeks. It's Maryland, Penn State, Illinois, Nebraska, Michigan, and three of those teams are ranked.
Yeah, then they'll still get another one with Illinois and another one with Iowa, you know, to finish the year. So yeah,
that big dude for Iowa is amazing. By the way, they did a piece on him on
he's ESPN incredible. Tonight.
He's great.
Yeah, he's been so good.
College player.
Hey, the Bucks games this week.
By the way, I know you haven't really left your 50-mile area too much the quarantine. Get the light inside you. But So we went up to, I got the new job in Madison. So I packed up my old office and I took my kids up there because I've always ran an armory my whole life. So that's all they ever know is that daddy goes to the armory, right?
Okay.
So now I live in a puzzle palace and I told them I live in a maze because I'm in a cubicle farm. And so they wanted to see that. So I figured it'd be safe if I took them up there on a Saturday, which it was. There's nobody there on a Saturday and because it wasn't drill week and anything like that. So. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, so I took him up to Madison, which is only a 30-mile drive for us. So we, and of course, where I work at is, I'm not going to disclose that. Never mind. So we took a drive through Madison afterwards, and we went down to the campus. We saw Bascom Hill. We drove along the waterfront, and it took in the Madison campus, and some people on and about. It was good to see. The last time I drove through Madison campus was like right in the middle of all the quarantine, and there wasn't a soul to be seen anywhere. But yeah. We drove past Camp Randall, past the Quick Trip that's next to Camp Randall that doesn't have any gas pumps.
Yeah, just the convenience store. Yeah,
yeah. We went past Kohl Center, wrapped up around the Capitol and stuff like that. It's good to see the campus again, though, because it's been probably about a year since I drove down around there. So.
I always enjoy
it. Yeah, your campus is doing well. It's still one of the, even in the wintertime, Madison is one of the prettiest campuses on planet Earth. And making that drive up John Nolan Drive, when you look across the lake and you see the Capitol and you're coming into campus, is one of the coolest ways into a campus ever. So, yeah, go Bucky.
Yeah. In other, I guess, college basketball, Marquette had that great little stretch where they beat Wisconsin. Then they beat Creighton, a top 10 ranked Creighton. They had two top 10 wins in like a week there, and they're 3-5 since then. They are 8-7 and in sixth place in the East. Recently lost to DePaul. They did beat St. John's and Providence and Georgetown. Those are the wins they've had. Two of those on the road, I'll say that. Two of those on the road, but they're losing to UConn, Villanova, of course, Xavier, Seton Hall. They've had some good programs in those groups, and DePaul. They'll get to play Providence, Butler, and Creighton, coming up here. So,
what kills me about the American East, which is the remainder of what was the Big East, is that you click on their standings.
Yeah,
and is Villanova ranked? No, they're still the Big East. Sorry, that was my bad.
Yeah, they're the Big East. They moved all the big Catholic schools out of there. So, yeah, Villanova is right. Ranked, yeah.
So Villanova's number 3, which they should be. But besides that, do they have anybody else? Creighton's ranked, too, Creighton's, you said, right?
Yeah, Creighton's been ranked most of this year here. I think
and
they're
then still ranked. The standings I'm looking at don't have the rankings next to them, but
yeah, I know.
Is Seton Hall ranked?
Don't know that they are.
No, right they're now. Not. The Big East only has 2 ranked teams, and the Big Ten has 5 to 6 ranked teams.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right?
Yeah, right. Is that crazy to you? Like I was growing up, like in like St. John's, and those are the big.
Yeah. Well, yeah, DePaul, Providence, St. John's, and Georgetown. Those are, St. John's is 9-7. Georgetown is 3-8. DePaul is 3-5. Yeah.
Those are the big schools, man. Like Georgetown was it. And even later on, Butler was big when we were in our 20s, what's his name from the Celtics was their coach and took them to back-to-back national championships, Connecticut's men's team was not as good as the women's team. Cause that's,
yeah, that's a that'd be
that's
pretty
a
tough.
Preposterous statement, but they were good. I mean, so they had a national championship. They had a cup of coffee in the. So it's it's just weird seeing the Big Ten having way more ranked teams than the Big East. I just noticed that when I was looking at Marquette's games coming up. It was like they're not playing a single ranked opponent.
Yeah,
but Wisconsin's playing 3 of them.
quite a few here coming up. Yeah. The Bucks actually had a couple good games here. They had that rough little stretch we talked about before where they had the Lakers and the Nets. And, they played right with both those teams down to the end. They got a chance with the Hawks. Hawks have not been good for a bit now. But, they were 9-7 or 8-7 coming in. The Bucks,
they're 4-6 in their last 10. So they've been, I mean, the Bucks are 7-3 in their last 10. So yeah. Even with that rough, I mean, they're the hottest team in the East right now, at least. So
yeah, back up to first place in the division, at least. They're a half game over Indiana. That game, the game against Atlanta, finally got some really good bench play. Portis was going crazy. He was hitting everything, mm-hmm. It felt like. He was the leading scorer at halftime. Augustine looks very comfortable out there. He's playing very well. That coming off the bench looked good. The two of them looked very good coming off the bench. Connington, I didn't see him do just about anything. He had some weird plays in the second half where just losing the ball and stuff there. But I mean, like, it was a bit odd at times, but they looked a little bit more comfortable. I would like to see Drew Holiday be more, more assertive and more involved front to back in terms of what they're doing out there. But he looked more comfortable at least. I don't know. I mean, it was weird seeing Portis being the leading scorer at halftime ahead of Giannis and.
Especially a guy that's new to the team, that was kind of an afterthought. That
I mean, that helps. I mean, though. The biggest thing more the
merrier, please. Like, yeah. If anyone else wants to score and do things other than Giannis, I mean, that kind of needs to happen. The post haste.
Yeah, well, it was good seeing him get a bunch of minutes. I mean, I didn't see. It just seems like in going through some of this that like. They were counting on like Thanasis Antetokounmpo getting a lot more done at some point, but I mean, I didn't see him do anything in this game. I could be wrong, right. But it just felt like he wasn't really necessarily that involved in this. Mm-hmm. But on the other side too, it's nice to see, you know, the moves they did make to go get some more bench depth, because they traded away a lot of bench depth, and mm-hmm. It's nice to see some of that turn around and help us out here in this game.
Right.
Thanasis didn't even play. Coach's decision. Forbes came in actually. I hadn't seen, is it Bryn Forbes? I hadn't seen him do much before this, but he comes out with 14 minutes, gets 11 points. Portis had 21 points. He's the second leading scorer. He outscored Middleton. Middleton and Antetokounmpo, you can tell the difference between the two of them and everyone else on the team. The passing between the two of them, the give and goes that they gave. And work through. We're so much cleaner than everybody else's because those two really know each other. And mm-hmm. I mean, this regular season doesn't matter. I don't care where they finish at this point. The Bucks are going to be a top four team. They're going to get a home series in the first one, and I don't care what happens after that. Because like, I don't care what happens leading up to that. Basically, I mean, mm-hmm. It's only going to be the round of four, the conference championship, and the finals. Those are the only things that really matter for this Bucks team this year. The entire point of what they did this offseason is to get Drew Holiday to make the starting five better than they were last year. There's been some weird stories about like Hill was the voice and soul of this team last year, and maybe they traded him because they didn't like what he said about racial justice or whatever. And you're like, no. It's entirely about making the starting five better than last year and giving up bench spots to do it. That's what it was. Because, yeah. That was entirely what happened, and in this game it really worked. The Hawks, like I said, they're now 8-8.
Isn't one about what he was saying about racial? Wasn't Giannis leading some of the racial?
Yeah, he was downtown with some of that stuff.
Downtown, so, yeah. Outside of Fiserv Forum,
I've heard one or two people write that story. I haven't seen a lot of people really on board it though. It seems like a weird take given everything else around this team and. Kind of what they've already done starting the season
else around this league too. That's a garbage take.
It is a weird take. I just wanted to put it out there mostly so I could poo-poo it and say I don't think that has any bearing.
The New York Nets have a guard that believes that the earth is flat.
this is true. All right, we're gonna wrap up just a couple things quickly here in what we lovingly call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, last call. A couple things we wanted to get into here on this. First off, Wisconsin men's hockey, they dropped from 12 to 13 by splitting with Penn State. Penn State, if you don't follow college hockey, which a lot of you don't, they love to throw the puck at the net. That is exactly what they try to do. They actually play on a slightly smaller surface than most college teams. NHL-sized arena. They play fast. They shoot the puck a ton.
Is that real?
Yeah, like, no, that's real.
And everybody else plays on Olympic rinks?
I think they just play on a bigger – I don't think they go full Olympic, but the size of the rink is a little smaller in what they play at Penn State. So, yeah, they're even talking about that on the radio as I was listening, because I was listening to radio some and watching it some, so it was a little back and forth there.
A lot of people don't even realize that hockey actually has varied surfaces, and a lot of it has to do with it. Like, it goes back to like being able to play an arena versus that's made for other things versus an arena that's made strictly for hockey. And that's why an Olympic rink is huge.
It's huge, and it's great. It makes the game go even faster, and there's a little less hitting because it's hard to line it up. But Olympic hockey
that's why the game is so fast when it's 3-on-3 is because you have less people on the ice. Like,
3-on-3 is crazy.
Less people to garbage it up. And that's what the Olympic rink does. I guess I didn't realize that maybe they had to fit their rink into a smaller confines, but I just figured that everybody in college would have NHL size rinks. I did not know that. Thank you for teaching me something today, John.
I learned that from the broadcast team getting ready for the game. So that was interesting.
I just honestly thought they all had NHL size rinks in the U.S. because it makes such a big deal out of.
Yeah, and the Badgers play at the Kohl Center, so they've got that same basketball constriction type thing. Mm-hmm. In this game, too, I mean, Cole Caulfield up to, I believe he's at 9. I think he actually got to his 10th goal this game. Leads the Big Ten in points. And Linus Weisbach, who's on the same line, he's 5th. 5th in the Big Ten in points. This team can score. They've done a very good job. They're one of the higher scoring teams in the Big Ten. Their goals for... Let me just see this. The Badgers are in 2nd in the Big Ten, right behind Minnesota. They're only 5 points back. They're 7-5-1 compared to 9-3 for Minnesota, and they split with Minnesota earlier. They have 42 goals for compared to Minnesota's 36. The difference is Minnesota's only given up 19. The Badgers have given up 33. Putting Rowe in goal has done some wonders in terms of that, because he gave up five in that 4-5 loss to Penn State. But the game before, they won 4-1. He only gave up one goal to a Penn State team that is 2nd in the Big Ten in goals, I believe. They're 3rd. Badgers are 2nd. Michigan has 47. But yeah, I mean, it's... He's done very well, and if Rowe can continue to sit in that net, he's a freshman. He is a freshman playing goalie back there, and if he can continue playing some goal like this, this Badgers team could be interesting down the stretch. It could be a lot of fun to see how they do. I'd expect them to look very good this weekend. They're going to be playing Michigan State. Michigan State has not been particularly good. They've been outscored 27-41 in Big Ten play. They have a losing record. They are not ranked. They are last in the Big Ten. So that's one the Badgers should, hopefully they can get a sweep and start making that record look a little nicer as they move through more of the Big Ten play. Big Ten women hockey, the Badgers continue to be number one in the country. Let's see who they've had this weekend. Got another big weekend this week. You know, the Badgers had games against St. Cloud State this week. They beat them 4-2. On the Saturday games, and then Friday, the first game of the series, Aaron, you're going to love this. It was 10-0.
Yay, I love those games.
Oh, my goodness. That is a ridiculous game there. So, 10-0, and then 4-2. UW stays unbeaten, or goes unbeaten this week, remains number one in the country. That women's team is continuing to just roll through WCHA play. And they're looking very good, and like they got a chance to come right back to where they were. A couple other things will be starting up now. Women's volleyball just started up. Wisconsin is the number one ranked team, which makes Wisconsin the only school in America with two number one ranked women's programs at the same time. Number one in women's hockey, number one in volleyball. They have played Purdue twice at this point. They're 2-0 because they won straight sets both games. 3-0 both games matches River against Purdue, number 13 ranked Purdue. 25-14, 25-15, 25-16. And then the next one, where were they? They were, it was a little closer next time. 25-18, 25-21, 25-19. Bigger games coming up ahead here. They get Illinois in Champaign-Urbana for two matches. And then they'll play Rutgers, then Indiana, then Michigan State. But so they got a couple games here before they have to go play Nebraska. They will get Nebraska at home, number five Nebraska, one of the big annual big-time games. They won't get Minnesota, number seven Minnesota, until St. Patrick's Day. And then they'll get number nine Penn State and number 24 Michigan to finish it off here this year. So, you know, looking very forward to this volleyball season. They've been very good the last couple of years, and it'll be interesting to see. The one other thing, I'm doing this to make Aaron very excited right now. Badgers wrestling. Tied for 22nd coming into the week. They went up against number 16 Purdue and beat them 22-14.
Yes.
Badgers had lost at Illinois 9-21, lost to number 7 Ohio State 9-25. Go in. They get a home match for the first meet this year where they had a home match. And in a duel, they take out Purdue 22-14, including an upset bid where the number 27th ranked wrestler in the 125, Eric Barnett, a sophomore, beat the number 2 ranked 125 wrestler from Purdue, Devin Schroeder. Beat him.
Is that your third cousin?
No, we are not related. But I just found that fun because that was one of the big stories of the weekend. The number 2 wrestler in the country at 125 went down, and that led to Wisconsin getting the upset over Purdue. They will get to play Nebraska next on January 31st. So you expect the Badgers will probably move up in the rankings with that win. The prior one was a triangular meet in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and Ohio State at the same time, all three. Next thing they've got is, like I said, playing in Lincoln, and then they'll have a triangular meet with Penn State and Michigan in Ann Arbor. That's a rough match there. Penn State's not a good draw at any rate in wrestling right now. All right.
Right on.
Sounds good. Aaron, you got anything else you wanted to wanted to bring in here before you're done?
Not sports related. Well, it's all sports related. I mean, that's what this podcast is. So while we're going through there and getting through the ash and trash and picking up the pieces at the end there, I was thinking about when we were kids, we used to have to go down and play. I played basketball up and through junior high because before you get to high school. And we used to have to go down and play Boyceville, which was down Highway K about 20-ish miles. And known as wrestling school. And when we were in junior high, I remember having to play in their little Cracker Jack box gym. And it had two half court lines because the gym was so short that you didn't have a half court line. You had one that was almost at the 3-point line on the other end. And that was when that was your 10 second line. And I was thinking about that when you were talking about the hockey, the different size hockey rinks. It's the only sport that doesn't have a standardized, there's various other, sizes. And I guess it happens a little bit in rugby too. And probably happens in soccer. There's various different, but I just thought about that, I last played basketball in outside of like YMCA men's league, like when I was 13 years old. And I thought about that. Interesting. it's really weird. Like if you could imagine like taking, the gym and like shrinking it about 20 total yards and moving both half court lines 10 yards apart from each other. So like that was your 10 second line was basically the top of the key. When you inbound it because there was like one row of bleachers on one side for the fans and one row on the other side for, it was just the smallest gym ever. It was great.
I looked it up. Dimensions at Penn State are 200 by 85 at the Kohl Center. They're 200 by 97. There
so
you go.
Weird.
Different range.
The other thing was, so you're talking about that 10-0 lead and that reminded me back to my freshman year at UW-Superior. UW-Superior was one of the first colleges that had organized actual, not just club level, but they were a year ahead of everybody else getting organized women's hockey. And so, they were beating teams like 24-0. Like, it was the craziest hockey I've ever seen, because we had players from all over the United States. We had a Boston, we called her Boston Powers because she was the goalie. She was from Boston. Her last name was Powers. Imagine that. And so a lot of the other players that were there were there for one year. And that's because it was the first year of organized women's hockey in the NCAA. And it just happened to be at D3 and happened to be UW Superior. Well, the next year, D1 hockey scholarshiped women's hockey happened. And Shannon Miller crossed the bay at UMD, who ended up going on to win five national championships. But in 1999, like just the next year, 1999-2000, I remember like a bunch of our players went over there because they could get scholarships. Like our team was just absolutely, it was gone the next year. Like only a couple, T. Janish was one of the ones who was on that first team. I remember her there because she ended up being a friend later on in life because she stuck around. And all the players that came from Canada and out east and out from various other places all went and got scholarships at St. Cloud State, Mankato, UMD, all these schools that could give scholarships because they were D1 hockey. But for one year, that 98-99 year at UW Superior, my freshman year, that girls' team was ridiculous. Like, they were putting up 20 points. I can't remember the one girl's name. She scored a triple hat trick in one game. She scored 9 goals.
All right. Anyways. Thanks, everybody, for joining us once again, allowing this to get...
Shannon Miller took that away from us.
All right. We get a lot of this off of our chest today so we can get through a lot of this together. We'll be back next week again. Like I said, we're trying to see who else we can get to come help us with the our Requiem for Packer season. And then Aaron and I will be watching a lot more Bucks basketball and trying to see if they can start gelling this team back together a little bit and see how they grow through the rest of the season, a shortened season at this point. And, keep on seeing how Badger basketball holds up at the end here. So thank you again for joining us. Remember, whether you follow us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or whatever else, please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. Remember also, like I didn't tell you at the beginning, you can follow this show on Twitter, at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host, and you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. Remember, Cheddar Talk, people. So, of course, we like to tell you at the end here, again, whether you are on the town or on the go or safe at home on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.